The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
Hey, hey, hey you. It's the artist D here, and I just wanted to tell you that Mr. Frank Cotolo, the Frank, is on right now.
Secure the template. Set the backside guide to appropriate lock set basket. The backside guide tabs include setting of jig, possessing template. What the hell am I reading?
Be happy. Romance didn't thrill you. You lied. You lied. You lied when we said we had a cast rig on the little cameras in the ovens to kill away with cost to spend. It wasn't the way you cast rigs to your master. It was the way that you gave me that caster to be that I could go on with a little hepistance and soften it. I was standing in the rain waiting for the busman boss and you came along with the mess. And I remember one night I walked up on your porch. And I asked you if you ever cast this with a man of incident, and you did. I was satisfied to sit home and go to mice with the boys instead. I remember one night you were standing there with your face hanging out, telling me that I'd cast this with love and little kisses and hummus to case and parchments. When you made me cast. There was all little lies and scuppers all through life to cast this with an instant debates. When I held you in my arms, dear, and I heard you gently say, this is better than love in a roundabout way.
It's true. It's a federal and take my line. But it doesn't have to be.
That's what you can tell over there. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I'll be right there. Turn it. And then Fern. And otherwise. Philosophical entertainment. Relevant. Irreverence. That's right, couple service, netaholics, and infomaniacs. Time to be curious, yellow, the lot of you. Here is the bard of broadcasting. Wake up! Tonight! Wake up! 14th. Season of the new millennium. With me, Frank Cotolo, and Cotolo Chronicling, that's what I'm doing. Luck, smarts, guts, and hearts, all of it put together into a cauldron of thoughts and a acrobatic, grammatical, and verbal circus. Stay with us. From Ice Cap to Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello, and into every bordello. And the ones that would be open, I wonder, you know, I just thought of that here in the East where there's this huge nor'easter. Actually, it's a sou'easter. Just thought about this. Even though it all emanates from the Arctic and up there in the cold, it's cold down there too, beneath the heat in the Amazon, and it's so cold down there. But I just thought about this, and that is, it should be a sou'easter because it's coming from the south. It's going like through Texas, it's going through all these southern Atlanta, Georgia, and then up North Carolina, which is really in the south. I don't know why, because there is a South Carolina, that's why. And then pushing up into Pennsylvania and then over to the north. That's the north part of it, but it's a sou'easter, which means it's actually coming from the south. But they wouldn't do that. No, they wouldn't do that. That'd be too particular. The meteorologists, they're too busy figuring out what it feels like when it comes to the temperature. Okay, they're too busy figuring out what it feels like. I'll tell you the real temperature. I'll tell you what it feels like. And making up words like tornadic. But they won't say it's a sou'easter. Why was I thinking of that? Oh, because I was thinking that all the bordellos would be closed. Wouldn't it be funny? Well, I guess they do that in Nevada. They could do that. They could put closed. And they put all the things that were closed. If there were a snowstorm or there were some atmospheric corruption going on in Nevada, and they still had television, and they were showing what's closed. And I'm like, casinos will be closed. This casino, that casino, this place, that church. Because, you know, it's a developing city of sorts. Not of sorts. It's the largest growing city in the last 20 years. And anyway, all this stuff. And then it would say, you know, the Pony Ranch closed. All the bordellos would have that closed. And that's exactly where everyone would want to be. Not everyone would want to be. On a night like that, misplacing, you know, that kind of weather in a place where they don't have that kind of weather with the practice of showing what's closed because of this kind of weather when what's closed over there. My name is Frank Atolo, and the man whose name adorns the title of this show. And that was not what I just did then, were a series of thoughts and sentences and actually a paragraph and concepts. That was not double talk. And yet, what you heard in that wonderful song called Roundabout Way, and I hope you turned on this show like right at the top. Roundabout Way. And I know everyone was trying to, were you trying to listen? You probably didn't even realize that you didn't understand what he was saying in the middle of the song when he did the talking part. But this is a guy that not many people know about. And through the years, there have been so many minor, you can't say stars, should say just performers. And this guy, Cliff Nazzaro, and I want you to get out your Cotolo Chronicles notebooks and write this name down. Cliff Nazzaro. It's N-A-Z-A-R-R-O, Nazzaro. Not to be confused with the George Nazzaro, who I've talked about many times in my childhood. Melissa, I remember. I thought I did. I think I have. I'm not going to do it now. But Cliff Nazzaro. Cliff. And that's funny, too, because Nazzaro is an Italian origin surname. And Clifford is not an Italian-oriented given name. Who Clifford? Yeah, well, either is George for that matter. Although the ways of St. George and the Dragon. Well, in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, what I'm talking about is Cliff Nazzaro. Look him up on YouTube and you can hear that particular recording and a number of other things. He's in some funny movies. And they're like, you know, the movies beyond it. You know, when they used to have in the old days, double features and sometimes triple features, and they got double features and then in between they'd have shorts. Well, Cliff Nazzaro is one of these guys. And the funny thing about it, he was a one trick pony in the respect that he did this double talk. And he was very good at it. And everybody who didn't know him would at first, they didn't know him, so they didn't know what to expect. So they thought they weren't hearing correctly because he did it so very well. And those who did know of him watched him to see where he was going to do it and then try to pick out how he double-talked, you know, what he said, how he said these non-double nonsense. And I thought about this. Because this week, Little Room in the Bone Garden for the great Sid Caesar, who died the other day, and he was known for doing dialects and not speaking the language. Excellent versions, I say, of German, Italian, French. Sounds perfect, except if you speak the language, you don't know. So it's double talking of the languages. But Cliff Nazzaro, and that was a great, wherever Sid Caesar went, they did that. And whenever he played on TV or something, mostly on TV, he was in some movies, but whenever he did that, they would ask him to do it. And sometimes he would surprise people and go to various international events and show up as the speaker. But this whole double talk thing got me. I was going to pull Cliff Nazzaro out of the vault. maybe I'll find something else and later on we can punch him in there. But we're not, and this is a good time to get your notebook out, especially for this particular show. This is not, although it's kind of marketed as a zombie. It's not a zombie show. If you love zombies, you might actually be disappointed in this show. If you're a real fan of zombies, because what I'm going to do is go into a wonderful article and get into the roots, the zombie roots. It doesn't just mean zombie roots. Where did they come from? But because this is such an incredible thing these days, the zombie stuff, isn't it? Wow. And then the new zombies, if you remember, we did a show. Heather and I did a show and covered some zombie stuff, but not at this level, because this is not about the movies. This is about the character of a zombie. And it's a new look at the whole thing from Laura Hudson, fine journalist. She's not here. I don't know where she may be. She's out with, maybe she's, and yeah, I do know where she is, because I heard that she went to the apartment when she couldn't, she was supposed to take a plane to Ballam and Mendoza. So we couldn't. I'm going to slip in double talk every now and then. Although some people think that's what I do anyway. But it's not true because if it was true, then there would be phenomenon on the sideline. And I think the way you do that is to try to slip it in on the cow when you don't. Mind. Okay. So we're going to look at that stuff and you're going to, whether you like zombies or not, This is important, because what we've found is a pop culture, and that's what we like to do, a pop culture nucleus of this phenomena. Something is a phenomenon and everybody's liking it. It doesn't mean that there's a mass idiots out there. And it is, there's something going on with that particular thing, be it a song, a movie, a trend. Something's going on there that is touching so many people, and so many people it might touch at a sub level. And that's what we're going to do, talk about those zombies. And I'll also give you some origins of zombies, because this thing has really gotten out of hand. But I think and you know me, I love metaphors, allegories, allophores, and metagories. And this zombie thing, as I was reading from Laura Hudson, this is a jazz bomb. This is a jazz bomb. You know, I don't speak double talk, and when I try to speak double talk, it sounds it. But if I just let if I'm doing the neo-postmodern talking stream of my letting open the doors of my subconscious, they're not locked. There's very little editing come. Everybody's coming through, all the thoughts and everything that's streaming through it. I'm letting that happen. So I am, in a sense, some people say, like, that's double talk. If I go down a rabbit hole or I go to an aside, and that takes, for some people, a tremendous amount of medication to be able to follow themselves if they continue to move on in a direction that's further and further away from the point they're making. Because to do asides, you have to go aside. And when you go aside, you either tell in detail that story and then come back to where you were before you went aside. And it becomes a plexus of thoughts and ideas and concepts all related. That's not double talk. That's what I do here. And the beginning of the show, I don't mean this show, this particular show, I mean the beginning of this show, back in 1990, 2000, whatever, people listened to me and they thought I was just making things up as I go along. I'm making them up as I go along. I'm staying on track and then moving over to the left or to the right. And this is the way people think, but people are usually so, they invest so much in saying things, and they don't even invest enough in saying things correctly. They invest in saying things, period. That's right. That's, I'm replenishing my precious bodily fluids as we go along. They say, they invest so much energy in simple things that they use cliche and they use supposition. And that's terrible, because you can't say, oh, you know, I suppose you know what I'm talking about. I assume you know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean. Five worst words and put together in that in that respect. And again, see, you know, that wasn't double talk. I didn't go away. I came right back to what I was saying and what I was saying and what I'm going to say continually. So I'm not going to stick in any double talk, because I am certainly not as proficient as Mr. Nazaro. And there's an aside right there, because I can't even say his name without thinking of George. I have no idea where to find George. Have you looked on Facebook and found other people? Have you looked for people you thought you knew? Well, you thought you knew. People you knew? Because, you know, they might be on there. But what I hated is that when a person has a very common name and you're looking for them. So if you want to look for, you know, Lisa Jones. Yeah, there might be, like, you know, now, of course, because there's a billion people on Facebook. You know, we found 7,453 Lisa Jones. Well, you know, I'm not going to spend my life, you know, unless it's something so dire and important that's life-threatening, I have to get in touch with Lisa Jones. I'm not going to sit there and start going through the list. But we are going to do this. Next week, the 20th, as February weaves its wanes into its weaving position of, you know, you could actually, you know, you could actually double talk with real words, but it's not, that's not double talk. That's kind of unlike a nonsense speaking, or it's, I don't even know if there's a name for that type of stream of consciousness. I guess it is a stream of consciousness, even though you're staying on a certain topic. No, you can't stay on a topic and stream your consciousness. If you stream your consciousness, you have to move along like bricks on the back of a truck with bananas in your nose. See, that's stream of consciousness. In any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, you're listening to Cthulhu Chronicles. And next week, I was telling you, see, I went right back. Tom Savino, my partner, I'm not going to say former because we do this now once a month, will be here. And that means fun and a frolic. The two Fs will be present with F and T, or C and S, however you want to use identification. His first name, my first name, his last name, my last name. A Savino Cthulhu Chronicles. And I don't know the topic yet. Tom usually comes up with the topic. And whatever topic we decide upon, it will be thoroughly covered. And it will be educational. It will be, I don't know if it'll be enlightening. And I don't want to use those three E's together because, you know, that reminds me of a person I don't want to actually think I was borrowing. But here and now, we're going to do something. And then we're going to come back and get into Laura Hudson's article. Stay with me. Get out your books. Get your beverage of choice, or three of them. Well, I haven't had a shot of Yukon Jack in a while. Let's think about that. But in the meantime, in between time, there's this.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cthulhu.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves the tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cthulhu, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
And he's on Amazon. You know, almost everything we know is on Amazon. And if you don't have a Kindle, you could still enjoy the pure pleasure of touching the pages of this book, because it is still available in paperback or in hardcover. And let me tell you something. If you get one of these books in hardcover and blurb.com, oh, this, you know what? I'm talking about another book. You can't get License to Skill in hardcover. License to Skill, you gotta have. You gotta either read it on your computer, or you gotta have a nook or a cranny or a Kindle or a cranny or whatever. I'm talking about Molotov Memoirs, you could still get that and enjoy the feel of the paper and the color of those wonderful T. Stephen Gesick illustrations in hardcover or in softcover, actually in analog. And if you buy the hardcover, and I know it's expensive, but I think this is a collector's item. If you buy the hardcover and you send it to me, I will, and let me know what you want inscribed in it, I will personally write that in the book to you. Now you're saying like, well, I have to send it. Well, you can send it to me in any possible form. I will send it back to you. I will pay the postage. So therefore you get it back and it's been inscribed. Hopefully, it's going to be worth something. And so that increases the value of what you have. And I pay the postage to send it back. And I'll send it back as quickly as possible. That will be my gift to you. And you can have me write anything you want in there. I'll write anything you want on the backside of. Now, don't go get the paper cover. Get the hardcover Molotov memoirs. Invest in buying it. Invest in sending it, and I will send it back to you. And it's going to be worth five times. I'll tell you why. Just simply why that's possible. When a book becomes a rarity, and it's in great shape, or it is inscribed in some way, because the, and that person is not available to inscribe it anymore. I'm not giving, I'm not telling you anything that you don't know. I plan to be here for a long time, but my plans, you know, but like my mother used to say, and your voice, your mouth, from your mouth to God's ears. That's what, imagine how big God's ears must be if God has ears. God has ears. He has to have a body. He has to be a he. But if you get the hardcover and you write, okay, then it's going to be worth something. And I know that because one of my books, my first book I actually wrote and got published, became a rarity and went on sale for collectors as high as $200. And it was, you know, $7.95 when it came out because you can't get it anymore. So you see, it can happen. So I've already hit the charts with collectible books. So I'll tell you to do that. Make the investment. Buy one, two, three, whatever it is. I mean, three. So now I'm catching buying three hardcovers. The hardcovers are the most expensive at blurb.com of Molotov memoirs. Send it to me. And you can email me at fcatolo@yahoo.com. I'll give you the personal address of the, I'll give you the address of one of our studios where you could send it. I'm not saying it's the studio because I don't want ninjas circling the house and being stalked. Maybe I should want that. In any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, do that. License to skill, just go to Amazon because the Molotov Memoirs is not available on Amazon. See, so it's even extra special. And it won't be there forever on Blurb. Something can happen. Anything can happen. Well, not anything. I was looking for another Cliff Nazzaro. Before I get into the article, let's see. I think we have another Cliff Nazzaro here. Cliff Nazzaro. Cliff, let me see. It's a Cliff Nazzaro. Where? I guess popular double talk videos on YouTube. Where's that other Cliff Nazzaro? All right, forget it for now. Oh, here. This is only a minute and 18. Let's play this thing. It's from a movie. Cliff Nazzaro, it's a cowboy movie, I think. Cliff Nazzaro. And some other guy. Listen, I'll tell you who's who. He's fixing a wagon, okay?
Uh-uh.
That's Cliff.
That won't work.
That's...
No? Why not?
Because, you see, you gotta raise the axle above the cannon fossil when you put it in the sailory. You just can't take a fail and lift up the wheel when the bag comes out in the fall facility. Put a little sandpapers in it. Otherwise, what have you got?
Well, it always worked before.
Sure, but do you know why?
Why?
Because you take the axle and pull it up above the saddle bar. You see, don't put the rivets. Don't just take a line of frame and pull the seat when you're lifting a bar with it. Put the seat in the force with the axle when the brake comes through the fall, and let me see. And there you are.
Well, what do you think I ought to do? Jack it up a little more?
Sure, anybody with an ounce of container fall can see that you pull the rivets out of it. Always remember, when you're pushing down, look at yourself. Ain't you got a bigger up seat? Or pull up a sailor board of a sailor price of reed and put some canvas in it and lift it pressure ball. Go ahead, pull a sailor reed and lift the axle. Pull it with
the moon. I hate to do it, but maybe you're right.
Maybe you're right, huh?
See? What'd I tell you?
See? Cliff Nazzaro, you've really lucked out because you're not going to hear you're not going to hear about Cliff Nazzaro anywhere else. Get on your cable TV, get on your mobile phone, go listen to talk radio, listen to any kind of music radio. You're not going to hear those two names together. Only here on Cotolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show. it really gets me. That's funny. Cliff Nazzaro. Long may he live. Long live Cliff. What is it when you, long live the king. Every day they start to drinking the wine. The king is dead. And he's, that was an old Johnny Carson bit anyway. But I think he took it from a movie because everybody takes things from somewhere else. That's neo-postmodernist. Ism. Neil Postmodern. Ism. Do I have anything else to sell or say? I don't know about that. Let's get to the show. Shows. This is the show. Everything I do is a show. I'm on. The Frank is on, as Dee says. Okay, Laura Hudson has written this. I'm not even going to tell you the... What do I do first? I'm going to do this. Let's go through Laura's article. And we're talking about... Well, you know what? I'm going to read it. And I'm going to stop in between and make points and do asides. Zombies. 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 By Laura Hudson. Here we go. We love apocalyptic fiction for the same reason we love horror movies. The pleasure of looking into the dark mirror of the worst case scenario and emerging unscathed. So remember, watching this stuff is passive, it's a passive behavior. This is passive behavior, watching movies, reading books. We're outside of it. When we watch fictional characters struggle and suffer, it allows us to confront unimaginable fear and horror from a safe distance. Not as a victim, but as a tourist. As I said, passively. We're not involved. They're not going to kill us. They're going to get us. But the idea that it can, the association you make when you see it, well, when I do, everybody puts themselves in those place, in that place. That's not Laura, that's me. You should know by now when I do these things that I'm going to say stuff and I'm going to read stuff. Back to Laura. Just look at The Walking Dead, the AMC survival drama currently in the midst of its fourth season. Now, she uses in the midst. Let's have a little grammar lesson while we're out of it. It's in its fourth season. In the midst. In the midst. If you write in the midst, college, you college students, if you write in the midst on a paper, on a essay or something you got to hand in to your teacher, and your teacher says that's okay, you go to the teacher and challenge them and say, how do you let me get away with this in the midst? Midst. We don't do that to words anymore. That's old English. I don't care if they put it back in the dictionary. There, Laura. Here I am talking about this wonderful article Laura has written, this and this incredible, isn't that incredible, unbelievable, this remarkable, I say remarkable is a great word, this remarkable view of zombies. And what do? I stop in the middle and I scold her. Well, let's just look at The Walking Dead. It's in its fourth season. Four seasons. And extremely popular. If you go on Facebook, people actually post things and say, watching Walking Dead. Great. Love it. You know? They want you to know they're watching it. Each year, The Walking Dead show promises that it will get darker, grimmer, more intense than ever before. And indeed, it does. Or it has gotten that way. Because it's in four seasons. This has always been a show about the long game of the zombie apocalypse. Exploring what happens to humanity, not just in the moment when civilization falls apart, but in the years that follow. The problem about spending too long in darkness, though, is that after a while, your eyes start to adjust. I want to mention at this stop at this particular point. I didn't read World War Z, the book, which is a diary of what happens during the zombie apocalypse, which I will never, you know, in fiction, you have to assume certain things. You have to just, you can't question everything because there's differences in time. There's differences in size and everything. And it's just too difficult. You have to just accept, I'm going to watch this thing. People are going to come out up from the dead. There's a virus. There's no explanation. There's nothing particularly, there's nothing detailed, right? So you've got to just accept it. But what Laura is saying here, and I didn't read the zombie at World War Z, the book, or I didn't see the movie, so I don't know how they changed it or whatever they did. And there's another one coming out, by the way. I don't do that, so I don't really understand the circumstances involving it. I remember when I saw Night of the Living Dead. We'll talk about that later in a sense, because that's what really revamped The modern zombie. Just the modern zombie. Right, yeah. It's amazing. And then I'll talk about the old zombies. The modern zombie. But they never said what happened. They staked them. It might be radiation. They said what it might be. They just assumed that now you know. You just accept it. They're coming up out of the graves and walking around. Okay. But now, none of them, to my knowledge, have brought up even that point. If you watch it long enough, if you, and I love this, the problem about spending too long in darkness is that after a while, your eyes start to adjust. She says that in terms of darkness as a metaphor, as it is in this. And of course, you know that to be true if you turn the lights off and just sit there. When a story is all valleys and no peaks, it doesn't look like tragedy as much as a straight line. Think about this one. No valleys and no peaks. In other words, no conflict, no ups, no downs. That's what valleys and peaks. It's just, and that's not tragedy because tragedy demands and commands conflict. No valleys, no peaks. It doesn't look like tragedy as much as a straight line. Here we go. More from Laura. The title of the most recent mid-season premiere, I guess they have two seasons. I don't even know how they work that on cable TV series. The title was After. An apt name for a show that, like the zombies themselves, is essentially a walking tombstone. The survivors don't live in a new world so much as they live in the decaying body of the old one. The crumbling infrastructure rotting around them like meat falling off the bones. But for all its insistence on marching forward into humanity's downward spiral, the recent mid-season premiere gave us a rare thing indeed. A glimpse back at life before the zombie outbreak, courtesy of a dream sequence starring, and I don't know, McCone? I don't know the character, so I haven't, that's a, McCone, or it's M-I-C-H-O-N-N-E, Michoni, McConey? I don't know this, it's called Mick. So what they did was, apparently, I have never seen one episode of the show, but I understand everything about what's happening because it's just a continuing drama. If you have a series, if you compress a series into a movie, then in an hour, have 2 hours or 3 hours, whatever, or if it's Martin Scorsese movie, 7 hours. If you compress it, then you have your beginning, your middle, and an end right there. But in a series, you got to keep going and going. Look at that Breaking Bad thing. Home, where did it go? 19 years, and then you got the last one? I'm telling you, and I said this before, I saw the last episode, and I went, that's all you ever have to watch. But we're not here to criticize series. I'm here to say this, because we're seeing this, remember? A straight line. Think of already, we have a fascinating thing that is going to apply to all series, but here, it has to do with The Walking Dead. If we know anything about Mick, oh, it's a she. Mick's a she. Michioni? If we know anything about Mick, is that she doesn't like to talk about the past, which in practice meant that we didn't know much about her at all. Because if you don't know about the person's past, what do you know about them? You only know about the character of what they are at that particular time, right? Yes, she's an amazing katana-wielding badass. Katana? Katana-wielding? What's a katana? I don't know. That's something else, too. But the absence of any biographical context, that's all she is, a cipher with a sword. During an extended dream sequence in this episode called After, however, we got a glimpse of Mick's life before. She was eating sushi, drinking wine, and arguing about art with her boyfriend. It was shocking precisely because it was so quotidian. 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 You got your notebooks out? Quotidian. And so odd to imagine that she could have been a person like us before she became a walking mortal combat fatality. She's a fatality? I don't understand the show. I said before I do understand. I mean, I understand the structure. I don't understand. So anyway, that's Mick, right? So we found out about her, this character, by a flashback. Okay, there's a reason that Carol, another one, doesn't talk about her dead daughter. Oh, Mick must be the dead daughter. You know, a lot of you people know more about the specifics than I know because I don't know the show. But, so follow it. But we're going to get to the core of this. We've already gotten to some important points. There's a reason that Carol doesn't talk about her dead daughter and why Mick doesn't talk about anything at all. Silence is the narrative of survival. Silence is the narrative of survival. I wish I could have had Laura on the show. This is so excellent. The survivors are like Lot's wife traveling the long way out of hell, keeping their eyes straight ahead as though they'd fall to pieces if they looked back. Lot, capital L-O-T. You have to look some of this stuff up. I'm not going to go do asides and show you this. Okay, L-O-T. You're looking for... Anyway, there's a person traveling the long way out of hell, keeping her eyes straight ahead as though they'd fall to pieces if they looked back. So you can't, you know, get any way out of hell. Just visualize this. Leaving hell for a better place, I would imagine. You know, why would you leave hell? It was so great. Leaving for a better place. Looking behind you. Not looking behind you, because if you do, you could fall to pieces. And they might fall to pieces. The past, okay, looking back is the past. That's a memory. The past is taboo because it's dangerous. And that's the very thing that makes it so magnetically attractive. And there's people out there going, there's a bunch of zombies walking around. What's the big deal? The big deal is, and I tell you this all the time, every piece of literature, be it schlock, be it kitsch, be it intelligent, be it they're all derivative, but being, it all has the core. If it's good, there are levels to it that are important because they are reasons why you're identifying with them, why you like it, not just because you like the color or how they do the makeup with the zombies or you like the characters. You're liking the characters. You're liking them for a reason too. And the story and how it develops. There's things going on there and things like this. Remember, we're in a straight line. And therein lies the magic of the flashback, particularly for a show that lives in an aftermath of a world-changing catastrophe. It's easy to look back at that show Lost now and dismiss it. But despite its eventual overuse of the flashback format, it's a device that worked well for a very similar reason. There's actually a typo here. For a very similar reasons. Should be for similar reasons. I'll just proofread this while I'm at it. Oh, God. Zombie. Nazi. The grammar Nazi. Who'd have thunk, huh? That I would... Anyway. It's because, you know, you become a better... if you're a writer, you become a better writer by just learning some rules. And, of course, the big rule is KISS. K-I-S-S. Keep it simple, stupid. It doesn't mean you can't have a large and vast vocabulary. You can, and you should, but nowhere to put it. But keep it simple. Keep the idea simple. And know where you make little mistakes. I hate those little mistakes, too. And you know as well as I do, the internet is strewn with bad grammar. Where are we? The flashback form. Okay, so it was easy to look at, look now at that show Lost, which another, I was not, I knew about it and what have you, but I knew it was just another series, and obviously a show called Lost that is a fiction is obviously going to be like, you know, it's, you're gonna, people don't know where they're located, and they're lost and trying to get out to a place where they are located. Now, if you were to pick up a book called Robinson Crusoe, and you didn't know anything about Robinson Crusoe, and maybe you don't, you're going to say, well, it's about this guy, Robinson Crusoe. So you're not going to know that he's lost. Yeah, you don't know, because it's not called The Lost Robinson Crusoe. Or where's Robinson Crusoe? Like, where's Waldo? Yeah, there's a perfect, then there's a little fun book, right? Game. You don't have to know anything. That doesn't even have to be an introduction. The title says it all. Where's Waldo? All you got to do is know what Waldo looks like and then look at the pictures and you find him. Or you don't. Where's Waldo? Suppose for a second, the book was just called Waldo. Books. Are there many? There's more than one book, isn't there? Isn't there a slew of Where's Waldo books? A veritable volume, volume after volume, a series itself of Where's Waldo books? I don't know. Well, what would they be called? Where's Waldo 1? Where's Waldo 2? And not be called The Return of Where's Waldo? Son of Where's Waldo? No, then you'd have to know what his son looks like. Okay. You get the point? Where's Waldo? There's the story. See, when I was given a Where's Waldo book a long time ago, I looked at it and I started to look for him. So I saw what he looked like. I went, oh, here's the game. Where's Waldo? I guess you're supposed to yell out, and people probably did. There he is. And that, yeah, can you imagine how many people did that reading the book? There he is. Or there's Waldo? I would say there he is would be the common response. There he is. There's Waldo. Never a story behind how Waldo got to where Waldo got to. How did Waldo get to this location? Where's Waldo? I don't know, another book. Why is Waldo there? How's that for a book? Why is Waldo where we find him? How about that? There's a book. Why is that would be a, now their stories would go on forever. They draw these incredibly complex and this busy picture, and then Waldo's somewhere in the picture. Why is Waldo there? That's what I want to know. Can we get back to Laura Hudson's article? Okay. So you got that thing. We'll look at The Lost after that. What happened to Lost? The flashback format in Lost not only helped flesh out the backstories of a motley crew of survivors, but also gave viewers a chance to venture outside the island, a place that otherwise could not be escaped. Because they're lost. While we have finally moved the prison on The Walking Dead, we're still trapped on the island that is the zombie apocalypse. And while there is naturally no way for the survivors save death, that's the only way. There's the survivors, there's nothing left for them. This is not like being lost on an island. The zombie apocalypse. Apocalypse. End it. It's the end. We're watching the end. So Laura just says because there's no way out. It's not like Lost. Then she says, I personally wouldn't mind a trip elsewhere now and then. Let's move on here. You're listening to Cotolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title show. I'm the man who dust. See, I don't say dust. He dust Chronicle. I say does. And yet I'm in the midst. I'm in the midst of this show. No, I'm in the context of this show. In the midst of it. Not even in the middle of it. Coming up in the middle of it, though, we will give you a chance to go get some beverage. We will give you a chance to dispose of some bodily waste while you replenish your precious bodily fluids to get the beverages that do so at the top of the hour. There's the rest of Laura. Not much longer, and then we'll talk more about the various parts. Both showrunner Scott Gimple, I guess that's the guy. I don't know these names. And the creator was Robert Kirkman, have teased the idea of a radically different story structure for the second half of the fourth season. Though they remain coy about its exact nature or whether Nick's dream sequence is a sign of more flashbacks to come. Laura hopes that is the case. part of what makes The Walking Dead comics so addictive, despite their relentless brutality, is the momentum that carries them from cliffhanger to cliffhanger in each monthly issue. And looking at it like a publication. Comic books which have stories that, you know, continue with own material. The old serials. I don't know if you know about those. A lot of you people, you're probably too young to remember when there were just movies and the serials. S-E-R-I-A-L. Kids would go into the Saturday serials. And oddly enough, superheroes who wore horrible, horrible costumes by comparison to what they're available to make and wear today. Superman and Batman first hit the screen. Oh, boy, Robert Lowery was the guy who played Batman. Ay, ay, ay. You've got to go. If you get go to YouTube, you can go to YouTube, put this rumble, write this down in your book, and then go over to YouTube and look for Robert Lowery, L-O-W-E-R-Y, his Batman from the serials. You will laugh. And yet at that time, that was state of the art. The TV show The Walking Dead has a tendency to marinate in pathos, to decompress its story in a way that makes it feel more like a slow-motion tragedy. Hey, what happened to my reading? I have a little plastic ruler, you know, I put on the line so I make sure I can read. So I'm reading this for the first time. I don't prepare. I'm always prepared. I don't rehearse the show, but I'm always prepared. The show, let's go through that again. The Walking Dead show has a tendency to marinate in pathos, to decompress its story in a way that makes it feel more like a slow-motion tragedy than an action series. That isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it can be occasionally difficult to endure, especially unleavened by either narrative variety or emotional relief. At what point does the series become a sort of misery porn? Like Saw, that movie. But with sadness. At what point? I guess we have to figure, and maybe, I don't know if anybody expects, and I didn't see World War Z, so I don't know how they, I didn't read that either. If it's the very nature of calling something the zombie apocalypse means it's the end, as she's saying, you know, you're not getting away from this, it's all over. Save death, there will be no survivors. It's all over. Eventually they get it. And then they become, and then just the Walking Dead walk around. They walk too, they're not skip. They don't skip. There's no skipping dead. There's no crawling dead. There's no jumping dead. No dancing dead. There's no riding dead. There's no dragging dead. There's walking dead. There's no sprinting dead. There's no long distance running dead. There's just walking dead. And you see how they walk. They became faster as time went. One time the zombie idea, the zombie couldn't walk fast at all. See, I don't understand that either. Why not? Okay, well, anyway, that's when you know, there's one of the reasons why, I guess there's a great reason here why I don't write science fiction. I think you got the picture, right? I got too many questions myself. I don't know what to leave to your imagination or not. By necessity, this program, The Walking Dead, is a show about the people who managed to make it out alive, but the more time passes, it's harder and harder to think of them as winners. The passage of time isn't marked by growth or change, but by damage. And how long they survive is a function of exactly how much they can absorb. Enduring in this world is its own form of punishment. Sometimes, and death can start to look palliative rather than punishing. It says here, just ask Mick's boyfriend Mike, who it's implied may have killed himself to escape living in the after and perhaps even killed their son as well. So in other words, or in as many words, if you commit suicide, you don't become a zombie? Whew. The rules. Where were the rules? They changed from movie to movie, from idea to idea, from... We're almost done with this. And we're going to finish this and then go into the concept of what is a zombie, what it was supposed to do, and the idea of it being a metaphor of what has become this pop culture phenomenon of us watching our kind walking among those of us who have passed, who want us to pass on, who come after us. It's a Walking Dead, or also a, you know, it's aside from being a metaphor for death, they're a living, walking, talking metaphor for death. What are they doing? That's right. They're killing our memories. That is part of another situation we're going to go. Situation? Did I say situation? Part of another article when we get to Dylan Charles. Our idea, myth and metaphor, playing an important role in constructing the culture and creating the purpose in our lives. That's what's going on with these zombies and why in this day and age this is so incredibly popular. We're all in touch with this thing. After devoting four seasons to the relentless grind of survival and emerging with no realistic hope in sight, the biggest struggle for the survivors in The Walking Dead isn't finding a way to survive, it's finding a reason. This is where I'm going to leave you right now before we go to break for the hour. Think about that. In this relentless grind of survival, think about this without there being... This is the metaphor. Without there being zombies, think about life, think about age, think about growing old, think about people you know, people who suddenly get sick and die, people who don't expect to, people who have dreams, people who believe anything in the world is going to happen to them who don't know. Think about this. Four seasons of relentless grind of survival could be as many years as you manage to survive, or your mother, your father, or your sister, or your brother, or your friends have managed to survive. You have managed to survive. The relentless grind of survival. Emerge with no realistic hope in sight in terms of a future. The biggest struggle for all survivors on this show, as we're saying is the metaphor for life, isn't finding a way to survive. It's finding a reason to survive. Whoa. Do the old Jackie Gleason. Whoa. I can't, because I can't go. I can't. My voice is still high. Listen to this. This is a high voice. I could still sing high notes. What the heck's wrong with me? I know what's wrong. I know I still have my tonsils. Does that have anything to do with making my voice lower? I don't know. There's so much I don't know, and I'm so proud to feel good about saying it. I don't know. Not you know what I mean. I don't know. A reason to survive. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of this show, Cotolo Chronicles. This is a drum solo. Next week, I will be partnering again with Tom Savino. And if it permits, perhaps there'll be others here laughing along with us. For now, we're going to come back after a whole bunch of stuff here. If you go do what you got to do, if you just want to sit back and relax and listen, then do that. We have another hour left, and we're going to talk more about the zombie, about the metaphors. You're going to want, you know, if you're listening, there's no spoiler alert here, because when you go back and watch the next episode of this or anything zombie-like now, at least modern zombie-like, from Night of the Living Dead on. All those, that's Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Light of the Dead, Home of the Dead, Home of the Dead, and the home of the zombie apocalypse, and the home of, my name is Arkansas, man's name is Andrew, that's right. So stay with us, and we promise more for you and everything.
Thank you. The Dole Chronicles. The internet talk show from the Neo Postmodern World.
These are the sounds of impaired driving. And then...
Roger, pump one.
I don't think he's going to make it.
When you drive impaired, there's a price we all pay. Emergency response costs, doctors, caregivers, and more. Studies show that impaired driving costs us billions of dollars each year. But the victims of impaired driving pay the biggest price.
Change for the better.
MAD Canada. Helping the victim, stopping the crime.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
Hey, how you doing? This is Joe Walsh. I'm speaking on behalf of RAD. It's okay to rock and roll, right? But don't drive home drunk. If you're drunk, call me up. I have a limo. I'll come and get you.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Ray and Garnet, Garnet and Ray have a harness racing show. Check them out on SRN1, Fridays from 9.
Hey girls, we know it's hot. When a guy respects a girl enough to ask and doesn't just try to make a move on us. We don't want to be pushed, pressured, or persuaded to have sex. We can make up our own minds. And when we say no, we mean no, not maybe or I need to be convinced more. It doesn't matter what we're wearing, what we've done in the past, or whether or not we said yes but then changed our mind. It's hot when guys respect our decision. If they don't and try to force groping or sex, it's illegal. That's right. Groping or sex without our permission is illegal. And any guy who tries to get away with it can get arrested for sexual assault. And that's on his record permanently. Hey, real men respect. And respect is hot.
Respect!
For information about sexual assault, log on to WCASA.org. That's WCASA.org. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault, the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services, and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm God.
My customers love my business, but no one knows about me.
Sorry, I only do miracles. But Ridley Promotions can help you.
Ridley Promotions, home of Promotions 2.0, where satisfied customers are your advertisement.
Call 1-888-743-4234 or visit ridleypromotions.ca.
Hi, I'm the narrator. Let's see what Frank Cotolo is up to in the studio.
I'm about to have a duel with my co-host, Jeremy Long.
All of a sudden, a bear attacks out of nowhere.
Oh no! All of a sudden, a bear is attacking out of nowhere!
The bear chews Frank in half and then turns towards Jeremy.
I don't have a lot of time here, mainly because this is only a 30-second spot, and I'm facing imminent death. Listen to Cotolo Chronicles Live Thursday night from 9 to 11 p.m. at 148.ca SRN Media Works with me, Frank Cotolo, and Jeremy Long. Say goodbye, Jeremy. That's enough.
With video games, I always check their rating and content descriptors on the package. But there are times when I'd like more detail about what's in the game. That's why I love these new rating summaries. They provide an in-depth description of a game's content to help me decide if it's okay for my kids to play. Rating summaries are free and available on my smartphone or at home online.
For more information about video game ratings and rating summaries, go to ESRB.org.
I want...
And you will undoubtedly hear it many more times as the days go by. Now, just in case you're hazy on exactly what it means, let me give you a rough idea. It means that the cost of your clothes and food has gone up to a point where the family budget has become somewhat strained. Well, that's one of those things. And you can't be expected to increase the family income. But there are some things you can do to help. For instance, take better care of your clothes. When you come home from school, change into old clothes before you go out to play. Take care of your health, because doctors and medicines are expensive. Eat well, but don't waste. Take your full share, but eat all you take. Try not to ask mother and dad to buy you things you don't actually need. Make the best and the most of what you've got. Try to be more than usually careful of your school equipment, such as paper, pencils, and so forth. Make them last and go as far as you possibly can. Remember that all members of a family must pull together at a time like this. So do your share.
Ladies and gentlemen, the chief hope of our enemies is to divide the United States along racial and religious lines and thereby conquer us. Let's not spread prejudice. A divided America is a weak America. Through our behavior, we encourage the respect of our children and make them better neighbors to all races and religions. Remind them that being good neighbors has helped make our country great and kept her free. Thank you.
Parents, there's a new rule for school. Students entering seventh grade this fall need proof of a whooping cough booster shot before starting school. Don't wait. Call your doctor now to make sure your child is protected. Learn more at shotsforschool.org. Message brought to you by the California Department of Public Health.
I want to tell you to do one thing, though, and if you'll pay attention to me, it might save your life. I want you to buckle up and live. Seatbelts and shoulder harnesses can be your second chance. Now, if you never had an accident, you could be next, because you gamble every time you get in your car. Now, you cut down the odds against you getting killed, you understand, by buckling up your seatbelt or your harness. Use them as advised by your car's manufacturer, and have your passengers use them, too. Automobile accidents can be deadly. Be sure you get that second chance. Buckle up and live.
Everybody's voting for the friendly voice of radio, the people's choice. Music, weather, sports, and news, it's radio. The people choose. Everybody's swinging to the swinging voice of radio, the people's choice. Big fry, small fry, gone to dawn, it's radio that turns them on. East coast, west coast, in between, it's radio that makes the scene.
Keep clipping there. My name is Frank Catolo. Hey, hey, hey. How am I tonight? Just alright. Catolo Chronicles, where I'm chronicling and where we're talking about metaphors and allegories and allophores and metagories of the zombie. What a character, what a name, what a band, what a show, what a night. It's dun, 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 dun. Anybody know what is playing behind me? I say behind me, behind my voice there. Under my voice? I say under my voice. It's not behind me, it's under. It's cue music from a movie. What movie? What is this? The trivia show? I hate that junk. I don't really hate it. I gotta shut it off with this because it's a loop. Dun, 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 let it go one more time. This could be like a news thing right here. And now it's Frank Catolo with the news. Today's news as told through the funnel of reality. What? does that mean? We need Cliff Nazaro. Okay, that's the end of that. And then we give it a boom at the end. It's a loop. It goes on for like 6 minutes. We're talking about the zombie, this phenomenon about the zombie, and the fact that The Walking Dead TV show, which is phenomenally popular. People, just like that Breaking Bad thing was popular. Well, I'm not going to go into those metaphors and themes and stuff. The zombie thing, be it a movie and this show and what have you, has a lot to do with, it's strange in the sense, as Laura Hudson has been reading from her article, how it's in this world that is ending, unlike the series Lost or Robinson Crusoe, who was lost somewhere and came back, and other people who were lost in space. Remember Lost in Space? That, I don't know if you remember that. It was a 1960s television show series. You might have seen them. They tried to make a movie out of it. It didn't turn out too successful. About the and they were called the Robinsons because that, of course, you see, this is all, everything we do when we get into this pop culture theater, the museum has ramifications, has origins somewhere else. In the television show series Lost in Space, the family was the Robinsons. And of course, there is another famous classic called Swiss Family Robinson about a family called the Robinsons who get lost. And so it's just a coincidence that their last name is Robinson and Robinson Crusoe has the first name is Robinson. But Swiss Family Robinson is a book about a family lost and how they have to create their own world on this island somewhere after shipwrecks. Shipwrecks used to be big things and they changed it into Lost in Space. They revamped it. They borrowed from the original. They adapted. That's a real word right there. You don't get into trouble. You don't get into copyright trouble. I don't know if you get into copyright trouble anymore anyway. I have no idea what you could possibly do to go to court for that. But that's Swiss Family Robinson. They never ended that. They didn't show the Robinsons going back to Earth. That was a series. So they were lost in space. But the idea was that they were going to come back. And it wasn't like, it's not space apocalypse, which means it's going to be the end of space, no matter where you're going. But what we're talking about here with The Walking Dead and all this apocalypse stuff is that they use the word apocalypse, and the idea is that it's over. It's over. The dead, nobody dies. They all become walking dead. The dead come back. And this series, as Laura Hudson points out to us, is a straight line. There's no valleys and peaks. You're killing them. This and kill. They kill them. Here comes more zombies. Let's kill them. Let's get away. It's not a matter of survival. And this is the most important thing. After four seasons, none of them with Frankie Valli, the relentless grind of survival and emerging with no realistic hope in sight that it's going to end and go back to where it used to be before the dead people rose from the dead. The biggest struggle for the survivors isn't finding a way to survive, it's finding a reason to survive. Viewers, too, run the risk of reaching a numbness that robs the tragic moments of their bite. Flashbacks would offer both respite and context, a chance to both momentarily lift the leaden veil of misery from the series and to better understand exactly how far the characters have traveled and what they've lost along the way. Amazing they got through four seasons without this. I'm shocked. I haven't seen one season. I haven't seen one episode. Back to Laura. When it's the one thing you can't bear to think about. This is a general thing in life. Here it is, right now. When it's the one thing you can't bear to think about, the memory of a better and more painless world becomes the car accident you can't look away from. The dream that makes waking up into your horrible life feel all the more unendurable. There's a reason that most horror movies start out in relatively peaceful, even idyllic setting. It gives us something to juxtapose the horror. A before picture that makes the after seem all the more terrible. Contrast. The scariest thing for a survivor to see in the rearview mirror right now isn't a zombie. It's the past. And if The Walking Dead wants to stay truly dangerous, that's exactly where it needs to look. Thank you, Laura. The end. By Laura Hudson. Remember kids used in school, they used to, you write an essay and you had to read it aloud, or you write a poem, and it would always be, we went with the teacher, because I want you to write a poem about your summer vacation. Now, what most kids would do, and I hated to, when I was that young, I wasn't like this. I couldn't talk in front of a mic, in front of nobody, in front of anybody. If you could talk in front of a mic and do the show, I could talk in front and have talked in front of hundreds of thousands of people. Maybe not at once. No, I haven't talked in front of hundreds of thousands. Maybe I am now. I mean, that's what I'm doing. But I couldn't do it. I was like a kid. But everybody got up there. And just to get myself acclimated to the fact that I had to speak, because that's the number one fear of everyone, I think, still, is speaking in front of people. Because I'm not going to get into why because. Why because. Kids usually write something about your summer vacation, and kids would get up and they'd read. And when I was in school, My Summer Vacation by Johnny Piccadillo. They put the byline there. By Johnny Piccadillo. These kids thought, and I didn't understand this. Maybe it's because I was always a child of pop culture. I always absorbing things from pop culture, books and TV and movies and everything then when I was a kid, and making things up, my own little world, just always creating. Maybe it's me, but I understand. Why did everybody call it my summer vacation? Because the teacher said it was My Summer Vacation. The kids would all title them all My Summer Vacation. So Johnny Piccadillo's stand up and he'd read his My Summer Vacation by Johnny Piccadillo. And then Barbara Smith would get up. My Summer Vacation by Barbara Smith. And Angela Padula would get up. My Summer Vacation by Angela Padula. Then Janet Moran would get up. I'd see Marilyn Monroe. My Summer Vacation by Janet Moran. The point I'm trying to make is not that there really was a Janet Moran. The point I'm trying to make is that there was. Everybody did that. Now I would get up and I'd have a title. Even though I was sweating, even though it was, I had to be different. I just couldn't call it My Summer Vacation. So I'd get a title. I'd write what I was going to write about, what I did, Summer of Battles, Battling Summer by Frank Attola. Because all I did that summer was make swords out of crates, out of the slots of crates, and then make we'd use the top of those round crates for tomatoes as shields. And then it was a big thing with guys, And we'd be able to hit Joe Federico on the head. There's a callback. And nothing would happen to him. But we'd make these armor, we'd make everything out of fruit crates, round and square, which we'd get from the vegetable store and stores. Mitchell Quitner's father owned a vegetable store down there in somewhere in 60-something street. And we'd go there, and his father would be throwing out the crates, and they'd give it to the kids. And we'd go, and we'd make swords, and we'd get nails and tacks and things, and we'd make scooters. But anyway, I got up, and I'd say, it was Summer of the Scooter by Frank Attola. The teacher would go, oh, wait a second, Frank. What was that? And immediately, I've Summer of the Scooter, because I didn't understand the other kids. Well, that's the title of my summer vacation. I didn't know it had to be. I didn't talk like that, but it was horrible. So this walking, so the memories, and I think she's, see what's going on in the wake of the zombie, which represents the end of everything. We go back. When it's one thing you can't bear to think about, the memory of a better and more painless world becomes the car accident you can't look away from. You know, you're driving down, you know, like, oh boy, I couldn't take it. It's a train wreck. I can't take my eyes off of it. The dream that makes waking up into your horrible life feel all the more unendurable. It's like, oh my God, but you got out of it, you know. Being this passive person and you look back at the times you escaped the death, you got away. Most horror stories start out in relatively peaceful, idyllic settings. Contrast. A good story starts out already in progress. Already in progress? No, in progress doesn't start out before something happens. While it's happening. And then you have that, what's called exposition. And you go back and you give, and that's this exposition. We're finding out about these characters. I don't know how it retained an audience for four seasons without ever telling a lot about the characters. But now that it is, because they didn't do flashbacks before this. Now you see, you're never going to be able to watch The Walking Dead again. Or Brad Pitt fighting 10 billion zombies climbing up a wall or whatever. Dylan Charles from a blog. Myth and metaphor play an important role in constructing our culture and creating purpose in our lives. Myth and metaphor. That's all the stuff we're talking about. Purpose. Remember what we said about hunting the zombies in the apocalypse? A reason to survive. Not of finding a way to survive, finding a reason to survive. Myth and metaphor are tools that help the subconscious mind to digest the happenings of a world that is too complex for our five senses alone to put together. Unless you're Dr. Waldar. By the way, I hate to say shout out. I'll news report. Dr. Waldar was mentioned in the House of Representatives recently, and I want to congratulate him, and he'll be on again for his work in mathematics. And we all know how incredibly intelligent, how ample is Dr. Waldo when it comes to the theories and mathematics. And you know how I admire that. Don't you? Do you? So I just want to say congratulations. Dr. Waldar does not have a Facebook page, but his wife Pat has. So why don't you go over to Pat Waldar, find her on Facebook, and congratulate our good friend, a supporter of alternative broadcasting in the first place, and certainly a supporter of this show, and a guest of the show, and a listener of the show, Dr. Andrew Waldar, for accomplishments that I will never in a million years, well, maybe not in a million years, because I am in the Smithsonian, but not on my own. That's my point. Is there a point, Frank? Have you once again strayed into the territory of asideness? Asideness. Land of Asideness by Frank Cattolo. Let's get back to this. Myth and metaphor. The screenwriter uses myth and metaphor to amuse the audience. When we hear tales of Homer and the Odyssey, we also receive cues we need to uncover the strength and perseverance required to face personal challenges. Our identification. We're being passive by watching and reading, but we're also investing some emotion and understanding of our own lives through myths, metaphors. It's like when we follow Ahab on his journey against the white whale. Remember Moby Dick? Remember I told you? Then there's a new book out. Everybody's going to call Moby Dick. It's what? What's it called? What? Man actually had to change the title. No, add to the title. Moby Dick or the White Whale. Those of you who listen to this show repetitively not this show, any Angel show. Listen to this series of shows repeatedly, religiously, loyally, however. Hear things like that again. But they come up. This stuff comes up all the time. What am I supposed to do? Ahab, Captain Ahab goes after Moby Dick, okay? Because Moby Dick took his leg. That's a, and all in itself is a metaphor. But when we follow Ahab on his journey against the white whale, we are shown in metaphor the perils of our own intensely burning fires of vengeance and obsession. And thus, we're warned on a deep level of the folly of allowing one's lowest nature to dominate one's higher self. See what's going on? This is why fiction and classic, and not even classic, everything from Yogi Bear cartoons to The Tempest by Shakespeare all have the properties of moral imperatives, conflict of characters, and they all follow these rules of progression and resolution. Again, what makes, and then you can think about The Walking Dead. You say, so then you understand what Laura Hudson was talking about when she wrote. She said, yeah, well, you know, this is, it goes on and on and on and on. This thing goes on and on and on and on. There's no hope. Why are we watching this thing? We know this is going to end. Where is this going to end? Well, this ain't going to end well. Now, beyond the tales of Ahab and Homer, we have today the widespread proliferation of the modern zombie tale. Here we go. Picking it up where Laura left off. The prevailing metaphor for our times. A zombie. What is a zombie? In this case, it's an animated corpse. A walking undead lunatic. A former person, now devoid of the qualities we all know as explicitly human, such as compassion, logic, love, awareness, self-preservation, so on, etc. The zombie is a soulless, animated human cadaver inhabited only by some of our lowest capacities and cravings. A zombie drools and spits, mindlessly walking into peril with absolute disregard, robotically driven to cannibalize and feast on the living. The zombie is only capable of committing acts of violence or acts of stupidity. In other words, like a congressman. Or a politician. I should have said politician. I ruined the joke. I'm sorry, Bob Hope, wherever you are now. The zombie is born of witchcraft, chemistry, or disease and is hopelessly beyond reform. A zombie is nearly unconscious, hypnotized, dumb, and deadly. Hypnotized, dumb, and deadly. The origin of the concept of zombieism, where does it come from? See, this is, well, first of all, before we go on to that, let's just look at what we're talking about here. Again, in terms of zombies, because that was the figure we were focusing upon, because it is what today is it's a zombie season of the zombies, and zombies were around in various forms in the past, but they never meant what they mean now. They never did what they do. They weren't even stripped of as many good things as they are originated in the world of voodoo. Voodoo. I believe in voodoo. Who do? You do. Do what? Believe in the power of voodoo. Who do? You do. Do what? Believe in the power of voodoo. Who do? You do. Do what? Believe in the power of voodoo. Who do? You do. And so on. And so forth. So this is what we're talking about. This stream of, and okay. If we look at the bad reason, Ahab, what was his reason for survival? Revenge? Obsession? You know what happens when Wile E. Coyote finds and catches? He always finds. What happens when he catches the Roadrunner? His life is ended. It's over. That's it. There's nothing to do. That's his entire focus in life. And if you ever watched one of the What was the last? I know they play everything out of order. They don't play it in any particular order. It doesn't have to be any particular order. But if you ever see the one cartoon where Wile E. Coyote catches, literally catches him. I don't even know if he catches him with an Acme product. He might just, but he catches the Roadrunner. He finally gets him, and he doesn't blow up, and the Wile E. Coyote doesn't blow up. He doesn't get hurt. Nothing. He's got him. He's right there. What does he do? He lets him go. Now, Captain Ahab didn't let Moby Dick, the white whale, go. But he went to his death trying to kill him. He just got out of his mind because that was his reason for living. His reason for survival. So when there's no conclusion, when there's no resolution, you need a reason to survive. If that's the reason to survive, what are you surviving? The word zombie is originally Z-O-M-B-I, zombie. What does it mean? It means spirit of the dead. And then you're going, hey, Frank, I didn't know you were a voodoo expert. You love those voodoo dolls. But this is where zombie comes from in this culture. Voodoo folklore says that the voodoo priests were concerned with the study and application of black magic. Of course, it's black magic. This has nothing to do with diseases. This is, he was all turned differently. Radiation bringing people back from the dead as walking, limping corpse. What? Yeah, well, it's fiction, okay? Didn't we somewhere, when we watched the second Fantastic Four movie, do we say to ourselves, or if we read the comics, as I did when I was a kid, did we question that there was this guy who was completely silver and made of some kind of substance? And he had a surfboard and he surfed. He was called the Silver Surfer. And he just swept through the space. He just swept through space. He just, like, it was a one wave and he had a surfing board. I don't even know what he did. I don't remember what he did or anything, but we didn't question it. We went, oh, the Silver Surfer. Well, yeah. I've always been, I don't know if you're like this, even though I accept certain things when I watch them, when I read them, and I was thrilled by the fiction and the creativity of all the stuff, but I still questioned and I thought about things like this. Let's look at the Fantastic Four again for a second. And this bothered me. It was funny. I laugh at it and I don't understand it. And I wish that there was some, and I do make up my own explanations for certain things. Even though they give us sketchy things, this Fantastic Four was stuck in, these four people were, they got caught in some kind of gamma ray. What is a gamma ray anyway? Gamma. I don't even know. We don't know. We're not Dr. Waldar. We're not Dr. Zarkov from Flash Gordon. I'm not even Dr. Kemahor. Or Highwell, the guy who brought me into the world. I'm nothing. When it comes to doctorates. I sure appreciate John Matthews calling me a philosopher. But anyone can be a philosopher per se. You don't have to be. I don't even need a doctrine for that. A doctorate. I don't need papers. I don't need a license. I'm a philosopher. He's not a psychiatrist. He's a doctor. A psychiatrist is a doctor. A medical doctor who goes into that form or specialist of mind control, not mind control, mind over matter. No, it's not that either, you know. I'm not a doctor at all. But the Fantastic Four, Reed, his name was Reed. Reed Richards. Wow. I pulled that. See, I didn't think about it. It came right to me. Thank you, Alan Watts. And he was able, he became Mr. Elastic in a sense, you know what I mean? He could just like stretch out any part of his body. And I don't even know if there was a limit. Was there a limit? Because he put his arm around an entire building. He could stretch and he could reach into the sky. His legs can get longer. He only had to do a stretch and he got longer. I know the implications. The implications were weird too in other aspects. Okay. But I thought to myself, so there was a gamma. It's like, how did that happen? The molecular, can a molecular structure change to a point where you can elongate something? It's just totally stupid. And I'm accepting something that's just totally stupid, isn't it? Indeed, I was expecting something that was totally stupid. Of course we were. The Fantastic Four. It's not like they're the normal four. They're fantastic. Okay, so zombies, let's go back to zombies and voodoo, okay? Black magic, so it comes from becoming, it comes from the magic, black magic, of course, not the good magic, it's the black magic. Let me go back, then you got to go to, got to see that scene in Malcolm X, the movie Malcolm X, where the guy who takes Malcolm X and makes him, give him his name and in prison, when he opens up the dictionary and shows Malcolm, who's not Malcolm at the time, how, you know, the definition of black in a dictionary written by white men. Because he's trying to make a point about this is the black man. It's a powerful scene. Black magic. Black is not good in definition, right? It's just not good. So the voodoo priests possess an ability to resurrect the deceased through the administration of a coupadre. It's a powder. Coupadre. Coupadre. Padre means father in Spanish. Coup. Like coop. Chicken coop. Coop de ville. Like a car. This powder is issued orally. And the ingredient is tetrodotoxin. Wow! When you try to say something and you immediately put your accent on the wrong syllable, you go, tetrodotoxin, tetrodotoxin. See? I'm not a chemist either. Anyway, this is a deadly substance. It's notoriously poisonous fufu, or porcupine fish. According to the legend, a zombie is someone who has annoyed his or her family and the community to the degree that they can no longer stand to live with this person. That's what they, so what do? They respond by hiring a black magic voodoo priest, and that turns them into a zombie. Look at that origin. Someone has annoyed his family or her family and the community to the degree that they can no longer, that the family and the friend, nobody can stand to live with this guy. What is their solution? They hire a black magic priest of voodoo. Now we have no psychiatrists and psychologists in this community. In this culture, forget it. Nobody. Here's what we're going to do. Imagine that. Here's what we're going to do. Go to the yellow pages, or maybe the black pages with white writing. Who knows? Go to the yellow pages. Look up Bokar. See the local Bokar, the local voodoo priest. Get him on over here and tell him to bring his coupadre, the powder from the notoriously poisonous fufu, because they're the only ones allowed to have it. I don't know. Why didn't we? We have to be a black magic priest. You can't just go out to a store and buy the notoriously poisonous fufu, and they're going to do a powder and give it to this guy or gal. But this is the idea. This is what they're going to do. This is what they're going to do. That's what they're going to do. So that's it. And so once a person is issued the coupadre, that person, the subject is prepared for their descent into zombiedom. Zombiedom. You don't hear about that in Walking Dead, huh? He would appear to die insofar as the heart rate would slow to a near stop, breathing patterns would greatly subdued, and their body temperature would significantly decrease. The public, thinking the person was dead, would bury him or her as if they were a corpse. So you see, this is what happens. They're living dead. They're buried alive. So it's not, it's different than the other. See, and then they die. I think. They would then be exhumed, still alive. Yes, they're buried alive, because everybody thinks they're dead. And then the Bokor has them exhumed. And although their physicality remained intact, their memory would be erased, and they would be transformed into mindless drones. So zombies are not actually dead. The original zombie is not dead, but stripped of his or her memory. And isn't that interesting? Because it's all erased, and they just become mindless drones. They're not necessarily... They don't need to stay alive by eating flesh. They don't, nothing. This is the zombie that turned into this thing that pop culture has created. The Bokor says, though still living, they remain under the Bokor's power until the Bokor dies. So they're only allowed to go back to death. And they're only allowed to die when the Bokor dies, the priest. Now, as it says here, we'll go back to, while we still have time here, what Dylan Charles says. And then in 1968, George Romero's Night of the Living Dead reinvented the idea of zombies and also started this entire new, the modern zombie, which everyone got attracted to because, as we have talked about, in Laura Hudson's article, the whole new type of monster was transformed to a way in which people were scared by movies and by extension monsters. It became a monster. Because remember the other zombies, and we might add that in movies, when they did zombies and they used the voodoo zombies, they used these Haitian people, and there were always Negroes. There were always black people. There were never, there was a movie called White Zombie when they gave this stuff and made a Caucasian. But all the people, who lived in those areas were all dark. They're all dark people, man. Not necessarily Negro. They were dark people. So the zombies in the early movies were all just, and they walked really slowly with their hands out because they were mindless drones, and their eyes were like gigantic, which is, if you look at the CatoloChronicles.blogspot.com, that picture I have on the cover, on the blog of that, from a movie in 1940s zombie movie. So in the late 1960s, America had been subjected. Now listen to this. Here we go now. Here's the zombie coming up as another pop culture metaphor. In the late 1960s, America had been subjected to the horror of the Vietnam War with the brutal onslaught of gruesome imagery generated by the media surrounding the war. America no longer needed monsters to scare them. The horror generated by mankind itself was frightening enough. Night of the Living Dead capitalized on this by resorting to the same nihilistic attitude toward death and destruction that was generated by the war. This idea, it's meaningless. We're just shooting and you're killing me, we're killing you, we're killing me. Remember that. Okay? And if you've seen Apocalypse Now, listen, Apocalypse Now. Okay? That Apocalypse Now takes to Vietnam, the Joseph Conrad book, where he went up the river. They even used the same character's name. I forgot now. See that now? I got to wait to hear. I'm not going to wait because we're going to run out of time by the time I remember. But it'll come back to me. The Joseph Conrad book, which became Apocalypse, but they use it as Apocalypse Now. Apocalypse Now. Okay. So we have the same concept, same idea, the same shading. That's the monster. The horror generated by mankind itself. When that became not enough, Night of the Living Dead capitalized on resorting to the same nihilistic attitude toward death and destruction generated by the war. The monster, the zombies, were not merely brainwashed servants or vampire-like parasites or mindless drones. They were something else altogether. Romero's Living Dead are a rough combination of zombie, werewolf, and vampires, writes a reviewer. They exist in a nether world between life and death, like zombies. They devour like werewolves, and they communicate their disease by biting like vampires. The zombies in Night of the Living Dead were weaklings, frail corpses, whose only strength was in numbers. They possessed no supernatural abilities other than the fact that they were reanimated. It's unique in the and it provides a scientific explanation. I told you this before with something. The scientific reason for what happened in Night of the Living Dead, the original one, and the one they remade, which was the same as the one they when they rebooted that, okay? Radiation from a crashed spacecraft. I don't remember that. Wow. I knew it was radiation. I didn't know it was radiation from a crashed spacecraft. I don't remember that. I've seen Night of the Living Dead 100 times, if two, maybe by 100, I mean, I don't know, 20. The zombies in Night of the Living Dead exhibited physical weakness that were parallel to those of humans because they were merely humans, or at least the animated shells of humans. Night of the Living Dead acknowledged that the enemy was us and us only, not some other or tyrannical force from beyond. It was, in essence, complete apocalypse that, unlike the Atomic Mutant movies of the previous decade, was rooted solely in humanity. There's the metaphor. We are the enemy. What did he say? Pogo, I have met the enemy, and he is us. Night of the Living Dead also succeeded in shattering taboos of family and personal relations that had, until that time, been left untouched by American culture. Upon transformation into zombies, the characters in the film exhibited no moral responsibility at all, thus allowing them to take part in such ghastly activity as incest, cannibalism, and parricide. Indeed, the film showed zombie brother devouring sister and zombie daughter devouring mother and father. That's a parricide. Okay, the remember the kid in the basement became a zombie, and then she went after her mother, and they were eating, everybody's eating each other. This is like a parasite. This is like cannibal, incestuous cannibalism. And that is nothing to say the fact that all the film's characters, including the obvious heroic protagonist, die in the end, thus reinforcing the film's depiction of all humans as flawed and vulnerable. The zombie has taken on a characteristics that have nothing to do with zombie, with the origin. This is almost neo-postmodernistic in itself, because it adds, through a metaphor, an allegory, allophore, metachory, it creates a new character out of a character that exists. Now, they could have somewhere along the line, George Romero decided that they were zombies. And you know what? Now that I think about it, did they even mention the word zombie in Night of the Living Dead? There's no zombies. And after that, they made what? Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, which of course is wrong, because they're not dead, they're living dead, which in itself is wrong. You can't be living and dead. So why wasn't it Night of the Zombies, who are the living dead, or the walking dead, or they're not even really dead as zombies? The real zombies are not dead. Did you know that? Are you going to watch Walking Dead again? You're going to demand so much, and you should demand this kind of stuff, because you're feeling a lot of the angst. Well, I'm not saying that I say angst. It might not be angst. The themes, human and poetic and literary themes of pieces when you're on, you're watching them, and I like to find origin. Now that the origin, so George Romero recreated the zombie, and I don't even remember, and I can't right now. We'll have to get Heather Drain. Find out, Heather. Did they even say there are zombies? There are zombies everywhere. Or is it just the living dead? Night of the Living Dead. Living Dead. Dead that live. They're live, they're not dead. They live, they're re-dead. See, there must be even another way of putting it, but it says, you know what I mean. When I say living dead, you know what I mean. Right? What? Huh? Myth and metaphor. So the zombie has really come to show beyond what happened, beyond what we went backwards, but that's okay. The zombie now relates to us and humanity in a different way. And memory is very important because we need a reason to survive, not a way to survive. And in Night of the Living Dead, when the zombie was rebooted and turned into this other character that has nothing to do with voodoo, there's no reason why those people, they just wanted to be alive. They have this will to live. We have this will, this will to live. I wish I had the exact quote, but Charles Bukowski had written once that in his miserable life, there was a point where he thought about suicide, ending his life. And he had this strange feeling of love for his body and his consciousness. He couldn't explain it other than that, so he couldn't do it. And we've had shows on suicide, so we understand the will to live. But in the terms of the zombie thing, fighting what will kill us is just survival. But we need a reason to survive. And that wasn't the case with that. And I think it's hilarious to once again, hilarious when you look at an origin. A zombie wasn't even dead. It was made to, a mindless drone, made to be buried. That's fascinating. Go to your Cthulhu Chronicles notebook. It's a Mead notebook or a rip-off style Mead notebook. You know the kind. I like the Meads better. Wide-ruled, not college-ruled, some particular. Imagine being anally retentive about a notebook. What's wrong with me? A lot. Same as you. A lot wrong with you, too. It's the way we... Now, where did that come from? The way we roll. You know, I heard that recently. I heard the origin of that. I love origins. I love these things. I love how things transform into other things. So was this a lesson in neo-postmodernism again? Well, it's always going to touch on the subject of neo-postmodernism because we're taking and reinventing and reworking things that already exist for the same reason. Okay. The same reasons. For reasons of humanity, for reasons of understanding ourselves, and the toleration of life, and, as Laura said, the reason for survival. If you take nothing from this, and I'm sure you took a lot already, remember two things. Silence is the narrative of survival. Silence is the narrative of survival. You don't need to say anything. It's just survival. It's will. It's animalistic. I must live. I must live. I must live. You don't look for it. But the relentless grind of survival as you continually fight to survive. Okay? And you emerge with no real hope. Because you fight to survive, but you know that the result. Not don't say end result, because that's a double. It's saying the same thing over again. It's a repetitive reporting. the result is going to be death anyway. So we're trying to survive. I remember someone telling me once. He said my father died. He was a very healthy person. My father died. He was very healthy when he died. So he died because it's natural. Death per se is how it goes about. Could be unnatural. That would be, let's not get into those semantics. But what I'm saying here is what Laura said. After the relentless grind of survival emerges with no realistic hope. The biggest struggle for the survivors isn't finding a way to survive. It's finding a reason to survive. And as Alex, smartest parrot in the world, said his dying words, 31 years old, which I thought was young for a parrot, because I thought parrots lived to be like 102 or something. Super smart parrot. He said, "You be good. See you tomorrow. I love you." I'm so taken by that parrot, by those words. And it comes from a bird. All the things I've read. Nietzsche. Watts. Pascal. Aristotle. Homer. Jethro. Everything. What happens? A parrot. Alex the parrot. Once again, thank you for being here. I want to say, Dr. Woldar, congratulations again, everybody. You could join me as a friend on Facebook, Frank Cotolo. You could write to me, fcotolo@yahoo.com. Just Google me. You might even be able to, I haven't tried this yet, but maybe if you Google the Bard of Broadcasting, I wonder if you'd find me, if some of the entries would come up as Cotolo, Frank Cotolo, that is. There's a couple of other Cotolos around. I don't even know them. I think, of course, you know, it's not the original name, but this is not now time to get into that genealogy. What we're going to say to you right now is that we'll be back. We promise, if as long we have a reason, and that is to talk with you about all these things. Tom Savino will be here next week at this time. We'll be talking about whatever it is. Go to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com or go to join me as a friend and share the misery, share it all with me, and you'll find out what we're going to talk about or what have you. We'll have something going on. Join me at Twitter too. You get by the other stuff I have to do if you don't like wagering and gambling, gaming, I should say, just gaming, then don't worry, go to the other one. All the other stuff I do. And Daily Meds, M-E-D-Z, at Daily Meds, M-E-D-Z, go there.
That's Cotolo over there, you know what I mean?
Over there, at Daily Meds, and get your daily dose of thoughtless wonder. That's a good way of putting it, don't you think? Sure you think. Go buy the books. Look at your notes. Cliff Nazzaro. Double talking his way into your heart. I think it's my... I got the hiccups from my coffee. Until then, which is next time. My name is Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Shall I be back? I shall be back. Shall be back. I'm coming back. I hope everything will be fine. I'll be here. Good night, Mrs. Erstwhile, wherever you are located. And again, see, what is it? You be good. See you tomorrow. I love you. I'll leave you now. I got nothing more to say.